We are now going to open the full House Committee on Judiciary, and we are going to begin by opening a work session on House Bill 2429. This should look relatively familiar to all of you. That was supposed to be funny. This is obviously what we just completed a conversation of. Currently before the committee, we have the bill as amended with the dash four amendments and the conceptual amendment for a July 31st, 2005 sunset on the bill. I'm just going to open it up to committee discussion at this point. I know a couple of you might not have been in for the last hour as this issue was discussed in the subcommittee. So are there questions, comments, or discussion among the committee that we need to have before taking action on this bill? Representative Vicki Walker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to let the other committee members know who weren't here that, I think that was just my namesake over there, Representative Cheryl Walker. I didn't support the dash four amendments, but they passed without my vote anyway, and so I supported the entire bill with the dash four. The dash four amendments were different from the dash threes in that it would expand the forfeiture to more than just a civil forfeiture, right?
How about if I try to encapsulate them and then you tell me if you agree with
them? I would appreciate
it. Is that fair?
Yeah.
I believe what the dash four amendments do that are different than the dash three is it allows a percentage of the entire civil forfeiture proceeds. A percentage of that then goes to the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission, which has staffing responsibilities for the Civil Forfeiture Oversight Committee. And the distinction is that under the previous law, that was limited to only drug forfeitures, is which they got proceeds from. Ballot Measure 3 expanded that oversight responsibility to more than just drug forfeiture cases, but to all civil forfeiture cases. And so this would essentially say, based on the fact that there will be a decline generally, it's believed, in forfeiture revenues as a result of Ballot Measure 3, yet they have an expanded responsibility for all kinds of civil forfeitures, that this would essentially fund the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission's responsibility for staffing the Forfeiture Oversight Committee by taking a percentage, and not if I'm right, Phil, if you're still in the room, 2.5%. From the local government forfeitures to fund the asset forfeiture oversight committee. And the amendments passed with all but Representative Vicki Walker's vote.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Ringo.
Typically, what type of forfeitures are there right now that are non-drug forfeitures?
Representative Lowe posed that question during the subcommittee hearing, and the answer... Related to cases involving prostitution, I believe there were four or five different examples that were given. I'm probably the less skilled person. Representative Shetterly or counsel, do you want to chime in on this one?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. There's drive-by shootings, there's DUII cases, there's prostitution under local law, there are what's called gray machines, and there would be forfeitures of archaeological artifacts if those are done by the state. Those are the major ones.
Okay. Any further discussion, comment? Anybody have any other questions?
Well, I just wanted to finish explaining why I voted no on that amendment, which was because these are new amendments. Local governments apparently were not too excited about this idea when the work group discussed it, and these amendments just came out, and the city of Portland came, and they were neutral, mostly because they hadn't had a chance to review the amendments. So I feel like they're jumping the gun on saying they're not going to have enough money, and that we should just give this a little time to work through the process, and actually this dash four could be adopted over in the Senate, but nobody listened to me, so we passed it anyway.
Let me respond, I guess, with why I thought it was appropriate to adopt the dash four. I think, based on the testimony by Mr. Finenke, that indicates that until something is put in place and the bugs get worked out for the next year or two, nobody's going to really know what the extent of this is. I'd rather err on the side of funding the Criminal Justice Commission with sufficient resources to be able to fulfill its staffing responsibility for the asset a forfeiture committee than to sort of leave them potentially hanging for the biennium, only to have to come back. If in fact this turns out to be a substantial funding source, I'm confident that local government has the ability to come back to us and tell us that in the next session, and appropriate adjustments could be made. So I think it's erring on the side of prudence to actually adopt the amendment, and if it ends up being too much money, I know we'll hear about it. So.
Okay.
With that, then, the chair would move the House Bill 2429 as amended in the subcommittee to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? No, we adopted that, so it's fully amended. So go ahead, Shannon, call the roll.
Representative Maxson?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Representative Rigo?
Aye.
Representative Shetterly?
Aye.
Representative Cheryl Walker?
Aye.
Representative Vicki Walker?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2429, as amended, moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I'm going to ask Representative Shetterly if he would carry this bill on the floor.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're going to jump to the bottom of the agenda. Again, before you all leave, I want to once again thank all of you for the hard work that you put into this work group. This has made my job, all of your hard work working on this thing together has made my job considerably easier, the job of this committee easier. We appreciate it very much. Now we're going to jump to the bottom of the agenda briefly and take House Bill 2343, and we'll open a work session. Council.
Members of the committee, House Bill 2343 comes to you from the Joint Interim Judiciary Committee, and it modifies our current child abuse reporting provisions contained in ORS 419B005. Certain professionals and other people, for example, firefighters and policemen, have a duty to report child abuse. What this bill does, it makes some modifications to that by not only including attempts to commit rape and other crimes in there as part of the crimes that must be reported. It modifies certain definitions. For example, it clarifies that part-time firefighters and police officers who are volunteers are not required to report. They are treated as if they were like most citizens in Oregon. It also refines the definition as to what need not be reported. For example, if injury caused by reasonable physical contact between children occurring during sports activity or play is not something that needs to be reported. You have the Dash 8 amendments from you. What the Dash 8 amendments do, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it states that an attorney is not required to make a report under this section by reason of information communicated to the attorney in the course of representing a client. Disclosure of the information would be detrimental to the client. I think you may remember Mr. Travis testifying the fact that if a lawyer sent out an investigator who uncovered child abuse, that lawyer would then have to report. That lawyer would then no longer represent the criminal defendant or the defendant. Another lawyer would be appointed, and another investigator would probably go out if the lawyer was doing his job properly, and the cycle would continue. Section 2, notwithstanding the subsection 1, a report not be made under the section of public or private official requires information relating to abuse by reason of report made under the section, or by reason of proceedings arise on a report made in the section, and the public or private official reason to believe that the information is already known. What we had is that according to the strict interpretation of this provision, a judge hearing a dependency matter in which SCF were to testify that the children were being abused, on a strict interpretation, that judge would be required to report that, which would be probably, it's already reported, so it wouldn't accomplish anything. Then the remainder of the amendment, what it does, going over to page 3, it removes the bold language in section 2. This would have required different licensing agencies to investigate reports of child abuse as it relates to the, and could possibly affect that person's license. I think the reason the subcommittee removed this is the concerns about fiscal impact and the fact that it would probably send the bills to Ways and Means Committee. Also, that is, it is currently a violation under 419B010 if a person who fails to report under this section commits a Class A violation. I believe the fine can be up just under $1,000 for failure to report. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's the bill and the dash eight amendments, which were adopted in subcommittee with some modifications as the dash seven. These are the dash seven plus the modifications the committee adopted in rough concept, I guess.
Good. Thank you, counsel. Is there any discussion about 2443 or the dash eight amendment? I'll just put on the record that this was, again, one of those sort of negotiated processes. At some point last week or the week before, I had essentially all the interested parties on this bill in the room in the judiciary offices. We went over each of the amendments, and this was the set of amendments that are now in the Dash 8 that had essentially removed all opposition to the changes in the bill. So I think it still is accomplishing some good things. It's not accomplishing everything that some people believe it ought to, but I think there's generally broad support from all quarters on 2343 as amended by the Dash 8s. Any discussion? We're in work session.
Mr. Chairman, the Dash 8 amendment, Senator House Bill 2343.
Representative Lowell moves the adoption of the Dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2343. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I move accept House Bill 2343 and send it to the floor with a duplex.
Representative Lowell moves House Bill 2343 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Call the roll, Shannon.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Lowell?
Aye.
Representative Rebo?
Excused.
Representative Shetterly?
Aye.
Representative Cheryl Walker?
Yes.
Representative Vicki Walker?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Aye. Keeps trying to give you my job today.
Aye.
House Bill 2343, as amended, moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Shetterly, I apologize. You were listed as the carrier of that bill to the full committee. Is there anything you wanted to say?
Thank you. No, I'm happy to remain quiet except for my affirmative vote.
Okay. Do I have a volunteer to carry this bill to the floor? Representative Cheryl Walker, do you want to do it? Okay. I think that concludes Mr. Taylor's work here.
That's right.
This morning.
You mean this morning. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your notice on your desk.
Yeah. Yeah, I promise we won't do that to you in committee, Bill.
I'm sorry, Lee. I was trying to move things along, but I had a
Of course.
We are now going to open a work session on House Bill 2369. Council?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2369 passed out of the subcommittee yesterday. I see that Representative Ringo isn't here. He was to carry it to the full, so I'll try to cover some of the basics with you. What this bill does is it revises the definition of business with which a person is associated for purposes of government standards and practices law, meaning that if you're a public official or a staff person of a public official, this changes this bill changes some of that definition. The intent behind the bill was to modernize the statute, which was, I believe, originally adopted in 1974. At the subcommittee hearing, the Dash 1 amendments were adopted, and there's no fiscal or revenue impact for the bill. One thing that was at issue yesterday was whether or not we needed an and or an or on that first page of the bill. And I had an email exchange with Mr. Ruttlinger from Legislative Council, and his answer to me is that he believes that, and for those of you that weren't in the sub, that is line 30 on page 1, whether or not that should be an and or an or. The controversy was that the proponents of the bill wanted to make it clear that all of the conditions applied to public officials that are required to file a statement of economic interest. Mr. Ruttlinger replies that he believes there should be an or there, as the bill is written. By using or, the law allows the activities described in any one of the four paragraphs to qualify as a business with which a person is associated. He said it's true that paragraph D applies only to public officials required to file a statement of economic interest. However, the other paragraphs can also apply to public officials who must file the statement because those officials will be, quote, persons acting in a capacity as a public official, as that phrase is used in the conflict of interest definitions. And then he goes on to say, all this is to say that I think the correct word to use is or. A public official required to file a statement of economic interest will be subject to all four subsections of amended 244.020 sub 3 sub B. And I told him that I would make sure that that got into the record because I know that the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court will look at that very carefully if this ever comes up. And I think that covers it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
I was about to say that I agree with counsel until she got to the last one. I do agree on the analysis. I looked at that, and I think four is the appropriate.
Yeah, that makes sense to me as well. Representative Ringo, we're on House Bill 2369.
I'm carrying that.
You are. counsel just described the bill to us and satisfied the concerns raised about line 30 on the first page, whether that word should be an or an and. It was legislative council's belief that it should remain an or, based on the way the bill was intended for its drafting purpose. Is there anything you want to add about this bill?
Well, if I don't know what I'm adding to, and I don't want to be redundant. I guess if the committee is satisfied, I'd rather not just...
Mr. Chair, one thing that you might talk about, Representative Ringo, that I didn't discuss, which might be of interest to the other members of the committee, is the examples that the proponent gave, because they were surprising of interest to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's an example. They gave examples how technically, if your relative is a clerk for a Costco in Des Moines, that's somebody that has an association with that business. And that could give rise to a conflict. A lot of people own significant stock with Intel. I mean, it goes on and on. I thought the most compelling thing was the clerk at Costco, that example. And is there realistically any conflict? No, but this is intended to address that.
Okay. So I see that it came out unanimous, so the committee must have felt like these were appropriate changes.
Okay.
Representative Ackerman.
I just have a question on the effective date of the Act. Could counsel relate to that for me? I'm looking at Section 2, and I don't understand it, and then I might have a question.
Okay, let's all turn to Section 2.
I just state my concern is if it's effective when a complaint is filed, isn't that somewhat unfair because you have a reporting requirement then which would be retroactive?
Sorry, what line is it?
We're in Section 2. Representative Atkins raised questions about the effective date.
That was passed in the last legislative session, that any bill will become effective on January 1st after the session. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, unless there's
another stated date.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, why don't we have an emergency clause in this just to make it a whole lot simpler? For all of us, just to make it clear that this, because otherwise we're going to have to inform each of us and each official in the state, you've got to live under the old rules until this date, and then after this date, then it's...
Mr. Chair?
Representative Shetterly.
Well, I don't know. I'd be interested maybe if Bob or Karen from the bar. I got the sense this wasn't a critical concern. This is more prospective, and while they're at it, let's fix this part of the statute. I don't remember hearing that there were actually any cases filed.
If I might, Mr. Chair, as I recall, that's correct, Representative Shetterly. Dan Olson from Washington County said that the
the examples that he gave were all hypothetical.
I'm not sure that, I mean, I agree, maybe if we were back at the beginning, it would have been, certainly would have supported this with an emergency clause. I don't think it's so critical that we need to slow it down for an emergency clause.
The one challenge with an emergency clause is it typically becomes effective upon the governor's signature, and that's a date that isn't a well-known date. And so the flip side of that is you've also got this sort of arbitrary date sitting out there that you have to compare against, so.
No, I agree.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ringo and then Representative Walker.
Well, just to reiterate what Ms. Hartel said, I think that the testimony was pretty much that probably there's lots of violations going on right now. Nobody really seems to be paying attention to them. But rather than just coast in this, we're all ignoring this unfortunate law, it's to clean it up, but there certainly wasn't a sense of emergency.
Okay. Representative Walker.
I just wanted to comment that the effective date being January 1st after the date of enactment, or after the date of it being passed, any action that is pending that has been filed prior to that date would continue under the old law, and then anything after that date that would be filed would take effect under this law. So that I think the way it was written was to not confuse the two, so that you would start out under one set of laws and then not have to change in the middle or try to comply with the new set. So,
Representative Ackerman, are you satisfied in your discussion about the enactment date?
I am with Representative Walker's explanation. I just didn't like this. It seemed like it was keyed off on a complaints file, and I don't know how you report before that time. I concur with that.
And the dash ones were adopted, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. All right, Representative Ringo.
Mr. Chair, I move that we pass House Bill 2369 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Ringo moves that we pass House Bill 2369 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any further discussion?
Okay, Shannon.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Lowe.
Aye.
Representative Aye. House Bill 2369 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Representative Ringo to carry. Is that okay? We'll now open a work session on House Bill 2371.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2371 comes from the land use section of the Oregon State Bar. It clarifies that when an initial land use decision is made without a hearing, but just based on an application, that the first appeal of that decision constitutes the initial evidentiary hearing open to anyone with standing. Representative Ringo is to carry this bill as well. It was unanimous in the sub, and there is no fiscal or revenue impact.
Representative Ringo.
Well, Mr. Chair, this was thought to enhance citizen participation in that initially a citizen may not have advanced an argument when it was at a pre-hearing stage and ought not to be precluded from advancing an argument later on. Representative Shetterly was leading a charge for the thought that, well, maybe they ought to be required to advance that objection initially so that the developer or the proponent of the project knows the basis of all potential objections. But as he noted in civil sub yesterday, he led the charge, but nobody followed. And therefore, he got off his horse. And
with only how many arrows in it?
Oh, there's room for more.
So, I think that to the extent that we can enhance citizen participation in our land use system, and make sure that people do not feel that they're shut out because they missed a procedural deadline early on, that's a good thing, and therefore that's why there was a general support for this.
This bill drew no opposition in committee other than Representative Shetterly.
That's correct.
Even when I tried.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just let you know that you'll also see in your packet of information a letter from 1,000 Friends of Oregon that was faxed to me, I believe, yesterday. It was not considered by the civil subcommittee, but I had it, so I went ahead and photocopied it for everyone.
Obviously, they're unused to appearing in front of our committee since they directed it to Representative Betsy Close, Chair of the House Water and Environment Committee. Okay. Well, we have before, this bill was not amended either, was it? There were no amendments.
That's correct.
So we have the bill in front of us. What's your pleasure, committee?
Mr. Chair, I move that we pass House Bill 2371 to the House. We pass recommendation.
Representative Ringo moves House Bill 2371 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion on his motion? Call the roll.
Representative Beckerman?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Representative Ringo?
Aye.
Representative Shetterly?
Aye.
Representative Cheryl Walker?
Aye.
Representative Ethan Walker?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Williams?
What is up, Shannon? I vote aye. House Bill 2371 is passed and moves to the floor. I'd almost like Representative Shetterly to carry it, but...
that would be cruel. No, it's a good bill.
Representative Ringo, you've got one today. You want to carry this one, too?
Sure.
Okay. Now, if people want to carry bills, you know, you got to jump up and ask. So...
Last time I asked, you said no way.
Well, there was a specific reason for that.
Representative Shetterly carries the ones that nobody can argue with because they don't understand.
Yeah. Those are the best bills.
Speaking of which, let's get the Pro Hakovice.
And we will. House Bill 2938 is now open with a work session. And the carrier of counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2938 comes from the Oregon State Bar, and what it does is allow the Supreme Court to develop a fee system for attorneys that are licensed out of state that appear in front of Oregon courts. It allows the Supreme Court to charge them a fee for doing so. That's called pro hoc vice, when you are a member of another bar and you appear in front of, for example, the Oregon State Courts, and that...
Counsel, can you give us what's the actual Latin translation?
You know, I just went to public school, so I don't know any Latin, but...
it has something to do with steak and potatoes with shrimp or something.
Yeah, but I just want to point out that I know that Latin now because of the extreme amount of money that I spent on my legal education, so it was very worthwhile. Representative Shetterly is to carry the bill. It was unanimous in the sub. There is no fiscal or revenue impact.
I always thought pro hac vici translated, you're not from around here, are you? Representative Shetterly.
Well, we need to get a new Black's Law Dictionary, Mr. Chair. I don't see pro hoc vice in here.
He brought us his old one.
Well, it's got to be in there.
No, it is not in here. Wait. Maybe it is. Maybe follow me. Follow through here.
Correctly.
I am. Hang on.
I love this.
The great benefits of this committee, Representative Wilson.
Uh-huh, I found it. For this turn.
Oh, for this turn. Okay.
For this turn on.
For this one particular occasion. Mm-hmm. A lawyer may be admitted to practice in a jurisdiction for a particular case only.
There you go, for this term. All right.
Chair.
Representative Wilson.
I just wanted to let Andrea know that although she paid the big bucks to learn the big words, I paid no bucks, went into the Navy out of high school, and came up with a bunch of words I'd never heard before either. Cost me a whole lot less.
You got paid to do that, didn't you?
Were those Latin too?
$189 a month again.
Ask him.
Or over your radio.
I was
going to
say, ask him where he was stationed, and he'll tell you the words.
Delay.
With that, Representative Shetterly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We heard testimony, actually very good testimony yesterday in the Civil Subcommittee about this bill and its connection with legal services for low-income Oregonians. We heard from Ed Harnden, the chair, the president of the Oregon Bar Association, that based on the needs study that the bar undertook last year, I think it was, that we are meeting about 20% of the needs of low-income Oregonians, and that's in spite of an ongoing and very visible and vigorous effort within the bar in particular to raise funds. Karen Garst's here. It seems to me it was at about $700,000, a little more than that, raised from practitioners, as well as untold number of hours served in pro bono and volunteer legal services. But the needs are significant, and I think the bar is to be congratulated. They came with, number one, a need, and number two, a way to help fund that need, which is something that, the second piece that we often don't get in this building. When someone comes and says they want something, bringing then with it a way to help get us there. In fact, this bill really moves us only so far. I think the estimate was that we might, the courts might be able to collect between $50,000 and maybe $200,000 in that range somewhere. So when you in comparison with the size of the need, this is not a big step, but it is a step. And in the revenue committee, we have the notion of a perfect tax, and that's a tax on somebody that doesn't live here. And in that respect, that makes this pro hoc vice the perfect fee. It's a fee on somebody that doesn't live here. But in fact, we do have counsel coming in from out of state that utilize our court facilities. They appear in front of our judges and are part of the infrastructure and the costs of the legal system in Oregon. So I think it's appropriate that they pay to play. And this gives us a way to move some new funds into a program badly in need of funding. Urge your support. I would point out that 13 other states have this, and as well as the District of Columbia.
Thank you. Are there questions for Representative Shetterly about this bill?
Yes.
Representative Vicki Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I assume this doesn't apply to federal court.
No, this is this would be administered and imposed by the state Supreme Court in state courts. We don't have jurisdiction over the federal courts.
I didn't think so, and that's really too bad, because I have to tell you, in bankruptcy court, we get a lot of people who appear pro hac vice. I would just really like to have them contribute. but we can't go there, so I can just say that I think this is an awesome bill, and I want to thank the proponent for bringing this forward.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
Let's see. There were no amendments. I move House Bill 2938.
No, there were. There were. Weren't there dash one amendments?
No.
No.
Okay. Okay.
I move House Bill 2938 to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Shetterly moves House Bill 2938 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, call the roll.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Lowe.
Aye.
Representative Ringo.
Aye.
Representative Shetterly.
Aye.
Representative Carol Walker.
Aye.
Representative Vicki Walker.
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Chair Williams.
Aye. House Bill 2938 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Lowe has asked for the bill. It's actually Representative Shetterly's bill.
He It's his own bill. Never mind.
It's his own bill. He filed it, so
I
would assign it, I think, to Representative Shetterly out of courtesy.
And thank you, sir.
And with that, I would encourage all those who support it to stand up and speak actively and vocally for the bill on the floor.
A better chance of going if we don't.
Use your own discretion. House Bill, okay, I think we did that already. So we'll now open a work session on House Bill 2983. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2983 comes to you from Chair Williams at the request of Charlotte Benz and Karen Wells. What it does is it modifies the definition of an operating cemetery, and it exempts certain operating cemeteries from payment of certain fees. Representative Backlund was to carry this to the full committee, so I will attempt to replace him. It was unanimous in the subcommittee. The dash one amendments were adopted. There is no revenue impact according to the LRO, and there was minimal fiscal impact.
And Representative Backman is now chairing the Education Committee today, since we're having an unusual full committee meeting this morning.
And so he's not here to answer any questions.
Are there any questions by those of us who weren't present in the civil subcommittee about this bill? Representative Krieger.
Maybe.
Cemetery.
They do, actually.
But it's not just regular cemeteries. It's only those with really old dead people in them.
Who they don't want forgotten.
That's right.
And appropriately so. Representative Shetterly.
You know, I'm looking at this. This is exempt. This applies to, in part to cemeteries having fewer than 5 burials annually. And I remind, I don't know if anyone else reads Robert Frost, but there's a very humorous Robert Frost poem about an ancient cemetery and the notion that perhaps the people buried there had could be convinced that people had stopped dying because nobody's been buried there for so long. I'm going to have to look that poem up to read that on the floor. Very good poem.
We'll look forward to it. Representative Wilson, do you get this kind of entertainment out of any other committee than this one?
Thankfully, no.
And the dash ones were adopted, is that right?
That's correct.
That's correct.
Then I would move House Bill 2983 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Vicki Walker.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I appreciate Ms. Benz and Ms. Wells for their stewardship of our heritage cemeteries and the work that they do.
Good. Thank you very much.
Any other discussion? If not, Shannon?
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Representative Ringo?
Aye.
Representative
Shetterly? Aye.
Representative Cheryl Walker?
Aye.
Representative Vicki Walker?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Chair Williams?
Aye. House Bill 2983 is amended and moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any takers on this one? It's my bill, but I'm happy to share.
I'll do it. I did the other one.
You did the other one. I'm happy to share, Representative Krieger. You did a great job with the other bill.
But
you're going to be our old dead guy spokesperson.
I'll provide the poetic commentary.
Yeah, good. There we go.
Great poem. I'll read that.
All right. Good. Committee, before we adjourn, I want to talk just briefly while I've got you here about our upcoming schedule. I know there's been some frustration with the efforts I've had try to schedule some afternoon hearings. Our challenge is, as we move into the heavy lifting part of the session, we have over, I believe the number is 430 or so, I think. Yeah, so we're over, I think, 430 House bills in the committee.
We don't have to hear them all for my sake.
Well, and trust me, there are more that have been shot on the floor of the room than there are left standing at this point. But even with that, with our limited period of time, it's going to be necessary that we have some afternoon or evening hearings on bills to allow members to have their bills heard and to allow, frankly, a number of bills that are still in process that we need to move over. Accomplished. So I've asked the judiciary staff to contact your offices. My plan was next week to actually have some 3:30 in the afternoon hearings. I understand some people had conflicts that were challenging with that. It was going to be Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday that we were going to have those hearings. The consensus, I suspect, was to push those back to 5 p.m. and to go evening. I had hoped that at 3:30 we could actually get out of here around 5:30 or 6, but that didn't necessarily seem to be the case. Representative Shetterly.
Were you able to find a quorum for those times? Because, of course, if you can get a bare quorum, I'd go ahead with the hearings, I would think.
Well, and that's what my plan is. Patsy Wood from the Judiciary Office has been trying to contact each of your offices in the last 24 hours to confirm your availability. I would appreciate it if at some point today, if you haven't been specifically asked, you contact Patsy and let her know your availability for next week at those times, because it really is my intent. I mean, we bump up against the floor session. In previous in previous sessions, judiciary had always been an afternoon committee, which meant that we could run late if we needed to. We have a much more difficult problem as we bump up into the floor session, so we're just going to have to schedule some either afternoon or early evening hearings for probably about the next 30 days, at least a couple of times a week, and I just would ask the committee's indulgence on that. I know that this means that you don't get your afternoon meetings with lobbyists and the rest. Frankly, the work really gets done in this room and not in those rooms, and so I'd encourage you to try to keep some time on your schedule as free as possible. Representative Shetterly.
Well, one thing I would suggest, and I've mentioned it before, and it hasn't been received resoundingly well, but I think it could be easier, at least on our, I'm thinking of Monday and Wednesday schedule for the civil sub anyway, if we're trying to accommodate those, to start at 7. Because I've done that here before. We're here, and that there's not going to be any scheduled meetings conflicting with that time.
I was here at 5:30 this morning.
It would just be a matter of starting those meetings that hour early, and we could get that extra hour in for free.
I'm certainly willing to. I mean, it's tougher on Tuesdays and Thursdays because of the conflicts we have with caucus meetings.
I'd take care of civil anyway.
With the criminal, but on the civil side, I'm willing to go there if the majority of the members of the civil subcommittee are willing to start at 7 o'clock. That puts a little bit of an additional burden on our staff.
Not to mention the people trying to testify.
Because you're right.
Mr. Chair, I am willing for them to go there.
Thank you. We appreciate that since you're not on the civil sub.
As a member not on that committee, your compassion is overwhelming, Representative Wilson. Well, I'll leave it to Representative Cheryl Walker to poll her committee on that issue.
We did have a session this week at 3:30 in the afternoon to get all the testimony on one of our bills. So I am available to have hearings. You don't have people, and we did have some people coming in and out on the
right.
committee because they had other committees they had to tend to.
Right.
So I can do that as far as hearings are concerned when we have opportunity to do that. I am available for evenings. And I could cancel my appointments for some of the afternoons because I know we have some people that are coming from quite a distance. Early is hard
right.
when they're driving. So.
Okay. Well, let's. I would like to get sort of a resolution on this early next week. Patsy will be contacting your offices since, and you all know we're not having committee tomorrow. There is no committee tomorrow. There's no floor session. So tomorrow is a free day from judiciary worries. But before you leave today, if you could communicate your availability, talk specifically to Patsy because she's trying to figure out the calendar. And this is going to be a revolving issue. This isn't just going to be next week. I'm anticipating that we'll need to go into either afternoon or evening work sessions pretty consistently, two or three nights a week, beginning now and probably rolling through most of the month of April until we are done hearing House bills.
If I might, Mr. Chair, I would point out to the members of the committee that the schedule has already gone out for next week for 3:30. So if there's any way that you can make it next week at 3:30, then that would be the best because we'd have to redo the whole schedule. If not, and then we can adjust if you want to start doing 5 o'clock meetings after next week.
And actually, Shannon just told me she's doing the legwork for Patsy on this. So if you want to confer with Shannon before she leaves or call her in the judiciary office when you get back to your office.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Rigo.
The other days that we don't have floor session,
right.
You are intending to have judiciary on those days.
Yes, I am. I am intending to unless we specifically, unless you hear otherwise, I'm intending to have judiciary
okay.
on
go all day.
Yeah, on some of those days without floor session, we may schedule them just like that.
Oh, you mean
we'll
those Friday days?
Hearings on those
yeah.
days.
And I understand that we'll be losing some members because of their involvement in the redistricting process. Okay, thank you. We're going to adjourn.
What days of the week are those?